So hi there, welcome to season 2, episode 26. We're finally back to the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Aaron McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of championship side Peterborough United. We had some vacations. How was your trip?
Yeah, listen, to be fair, you know, obviously fans are like, oh, there's no podcast, but look, we have to have vacays as well, you know. So I had 2 weeks away. You had a couple of days with the cricket. Mm-hmm. It was nice, to be fair. It was really nice. And, you know, bar football, obviously, and, you know, everything going on there. It was, in the pool, reading mags, fucking a few dinners. I wish I was still there. But, you know, real life gets in the way. There are bills to be paid. And it's back to reality, as they say, until the summer. So, no. And your trip was good? You enjoyed the cricket?
Yeah, it was, you know, one of those bucket list things to go to the West Indies to watch England play.
Love that.
You know, being in Florida, only 3.5 hour flight away.
And, yeah. Brilliant.
So I had a great trip. You know, cricket was okay, but it was more for me about the experience.
This an awesome experience. I was shocked when I saw you were like going. I was like, geez, look at you off to the West Indies. I love it. You know what I mean? Fucking right. I mean, it's on my list of things to do. I've done boxing events. I've done golf events, football events. I want to do an Ashes.
Yeah,
you know, but like I said to you before we started, it needs to be in corporate hospitality because I couldn't spend 8 hours in the heat, stood there in the crowd. You know, I'm far too snobby for that shit. I need to, you know, drinks being served to me, nice food, shade, air conditioning, bit of glass maybe between me and scene outside. Mm-hmm. He's in the corner. I'm just like that. So, but yeah, interesting weekend. Really funny, isn't it? Because it's an international break now for 2 weeks. I said to Grant on Friday, I was like, you know, let's just get a win. It's been like 3 months. Like, you know, I think it's the longest drought, 15 years I've owned a club. It's probably the longest I've not seen the team win. And I was like, you know, it'd be even greater to get a win going into an international break because both international breaks so far, I think we've had our asses handed to us before the international break. So, and the other thing I wanted them to win, nothing about relegation staying up or, you know, suddenly thinking there's miracles on and getting carried away. It was more to do with you could see it coming. You know, like really good against Bournemouth, really good against Stoke. We should have beaten Stoke, should have beaten Swansea, you know, 2-1 up and obviously tried to sit on that. And, you know, with our defensive record, sitting on things.
Oh, yeah, season, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't the best policy. But it was more to do with I wanted it for the manager and the players because they're obviously buying into what the manager's doing. And you could see positive signs because, you know, you could just see it. And they deserved a win. Doesn't matter what happens here on out. You know, they deserve just to win a game of football. And they go 1-0 down again yesterday to a mistake, an honest mistake. And then it was, to be fair, we had the best chances. We pretty much dominated the second half. They really, after we went 3-1 up, didn't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we probably missed the sitter of the game late on. So for our fans, you know, they've gone up and down the country watching us lose every away game. And it was like nearly 900 of them. So I was like on a Sunday in London, I was happy for them. You know, and the players to go and win a game of football, because when you go 3 months without winning a game of football, it's tough, you know. And but that's the business we're in. It's a tough business, and really, really enjoyed it. To be fair,
you know, I'm sure that Grant's trying to do some new things, get across some new ways to the players, and you know, you kind of need to have the wins to buy into, you know, different methods.
Correct. I think obviously the big changes are he's got really good staff and. You know, he's a lot more. It's interesting watching him since I knew him from last time, the evolution. And he's a lot more into the sports science side, the fitness side, the diet, the food. I mean, the change is already in 3 weeks, you know. And again, I'm kicking myself, you know. And you know, because you always know going into the championship, you need to be physically like in prime condition. You need to be fit. You need to be able to play Saturday, Tuesday, or Sunday, Wednesday, or Wednesday, Saturday. And it's relentless because it's already a relentless league. And the massive area, and look, we will have, you know, a proper rundown of what went wrong this season. And, you know, was it recruitment? Was it this? Was it the previous manager? Da, 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 da. We will be really honest about that at the end of the season. But I think first and foremost, when you concede as many goals as we have in the final 15 minutes of games, yes, you can trouble that recruitment, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that you're a very good 75-minute team, and we're probably like top 15 in the league. But if you're not good when it matters, you know, in the heat of the battle, if you haven't got the physical attributes to go right to the end, that's going to be a problem. So I think all the things he's – what I really like is speaking to him the last few weeks, had Zoom calls with him and Cliff as number two, talking about the staff they need, the support they need, the little, not ridiculous money, the little things they need, the changes they need, right down to, you know, players going from having, you know, practically fry-ups to having like smoked salmon and poached eggs for breakfast. And you'd be amazed. Just the, and again, I don't want this as headlines for Alan Swarms. I'm not trying to dig out previous manager, previous whatever. I'm as usual on the podcast, telling the truth. The little things matter, you know, and I think giving our players everything the best they can get, as long as they back that up then with working hard. I think that's what our new manager is all about. It's like giving the players, is treating them like the fine oil, well-oiled machines and cars, expensive cars they are, giving them the right fuel, giving them the right instruments to go out then and fight a battle on a Saturday and a Tuesday and try and win a game of football. And I think if the players don't do that, then you can't say you haven't given them everything. And I think that's very much what Grant and his team are about, is giving them as much, without spoiling them, but giving them the best possible chance to overcome odds and win football games in the championship for a club like ours. So they're those little building blocks, per se, that have been put in. And planning for next year, you know, looking at it and going, right, you know, who's going to be with us next year? Who do we want with us next year? You know, because, you know, we got to come back from this and, you know, we got to go again. So, you know, staff-wise, who do we want? What are we going to do? Facilities-wise, what are we going to improve? And then player squad-wise, what are we going to do? And all those little things are coming together. And winning a game of football is great. You know, finally seeing Marriott and Clark Harris get into a level, probably 70% fit, both of them, but showing again that if they'd been 100% fit, you know, they'd probably end up with 35-plus goals between them. And it gives a club like ours a chance at this level. So that's probably the saddest thing, is seeing them scoring goals and knowing if they played a lot more together. And seeing the emergence of Ricky J. Jones, who quite simply has been, you know, for 19, I mean, against Man City, you know, the last couple of appearances, last week against Swansea experience, I mean, absolutely breathtaking. And then obviously you got a shoulder knock, but breathtaking. I mean, really, really excited about, you know, some of the younger players now stepping up and making a massive difference. Harrison Burrows came on at halftime against QPR and pretty much he was involved in both the goals. You know, those things are the building blocks, the things that make you happy. So yeah, really, really, I've just come off a Zoom call with a manager actually, and, you know, talking about what he's doing for the next 2 weeks with the players. And, you know, again, there's a plan, you know, it's well put together. It's well thought out. He's asking for more things from me. I'm saying yes to some, no to some, as you do with new managers. Yeah, enjoyable process.
You know, how do you balance what to say yes and what to say no to, especially if you're thinking, you know, my budget may be lower in League One as it is in the Championship, and how affordable is that infrastructure when I'm in League One versus in the Championship?
You'd be really honest, you know, and I've told them, you know, what we can do and what we can't do. And I did that in the interview, and I've done that throughout. And there's a lot of no's, because we're not Hull, we're not bigger club. And he understands that. He'll still ask. Every manager will ask. They'll have a wish list. And you can't give, as a Peterborough United, you can't give a manager a full wish list, you know, of, you know, we want four extra staff here, we want this here, we want that. Can we pay a bit extra for that stuff? No, because we just can't do it. We don't have that kind of budget. And at the same time, you want to leave yourself with a squad that's competitive to try and have a title tilt. If that's where the chips lay, you know, you have to want to come back. So then you're looking at it going, look, we're going to have a big hole here, and the hole's going to be in the millions. So bar selling a player, which is always the answer, you know, what are you left with? And how can you be really competitive? And the one thing we're on the same hymn sheet with is the manager loves the majority of our squad, particularly the younger players. So we're not talking about 7, 8, 9 signings. And everyone can go on about, oh, when we're not winning, it's easy. A lot of people get upset and you get negative. And I understand that. I'm in the same mindset. But you hear people go, oh, this lot will get battered every week in League One. That's nonsense. The majority of that team got promoted from League One. They're now younger players who are a lot better than when they were there. And additions as well, a la Poku, Randall, who we've not seen. Obviously, it's been a write-off the season. So, you know, and then you've got a Marriott and a Clark Harris who would do a lot of damage fully fit at any level. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we're looking at all of that and going through it. And obviously, it's my job then to say what we can do, what we can't do, how do we make it work. And we're trying to be fair to everybody. And we've got season tickets about to go on sale. And we don't want to punish season ticket holders. And we don't have massive price increases. We want to be really fair because it's not been a good season football-wise. So we want to repay that. Whilst at the same time, we've got loads of stuff for the club infrastructure-wise is going to cost millions to do. So it's kind of like a balancing act and a juggling act. And I don't want to strangle the manager and his team. with just no, 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 no. So I'm trying to do the best I can. It's like trying to keep everyone happy. But it's like everything else. Your kids ask you for, we want, there's our wish list from Santa. Well, you know, there's 10 items on there. I can do 5, but I can't do 10. So that's kind of what it's like. And I've never had a problem saying no to anyone. So, you know, and I'll always say to a manager, you know, I love your balls and I like the fact you've asked, but you fuck off, you're not getting the most of that. So that's just the way. And by the way, every owner or director or someone involved in running a football club has exactly the same thing, because managers are a rare breed. They will ask and ask and ask and ask and ask. And that's just the way it works in football. It's no different from a top manager at a top club to a manager in a non-league club. Because they will always see it as, I just want to improve the football club. And the only way I can do that is, I need more staff. I need to spend more money. I need to do this. I need to do that. So, look, it's a happy camp. The players are obviously embracing it all. You know, the proof's in the pudding. It's early days, but the signs are very promising. You know, the changes, the little things that are happening, you can see it in games. You can see players who were lacking in confidence and whatever suddenly standing tall. And you're kind of like, shit, where were you 3 months ago? But okay, you're here now. So sometimes managers don't get the best out of certain players, and sometimes other managers do. And when a new manager comes in, it's like a fresh start for everybody, and people are trying. And that's all you ever ask of your footballers, right, is for them to try. And I've always said throughout the podcast, I've always felt we have an honest group of players. And yes, whilst they've not been at their best a lot of the season, and whilst maybe they haven't been getting the training and the conditioning they should have had most of the season, we're here now. So we have to deal with it and see where it takes us and give ourselves a platform for next year. That's my opinion.
So we haven't spoken since then. How was the Manchester City game for you? You were watching that while you were in Dubai.
Yeah, it was great. Everyone enjoyed it. I was really happy for my partners. They were there. My wife was kind of like surprised we didn't fly over for it. And I was like, you know what? It's okay. You know, it's like, that's a game for the fans. That's a game for my partners. I've been around, you know, a long time. I enjoyed watching everyone else enjoy it. I didn't need to be there. And, you know, it was good. It was fun to watch. You know, we could have gone 1-0 up. I think Smodic's missed a really good chance, you know, got himself in a really good position. And he's been a revelation the last 4 or 5 games, by the way. He's really come to the forefront. He's obviously feels he got a manager that really, at the moment, loves him and whatever else. So that's nice to see. But Ricky, you know, ran their back line for, you know, hard, you know what I mean? Like their center half, I think surprised him with his pace. Defensively, we were strong and we held out for an hour. It was a great event. We made a lot of money, which helped with the cash flow deficit. We'd obviously made mistakes on the price of tickets, but it was a sellout and it was the biggest crowd for years and years. So when you get a taste of that, you want more. And it was really good for the city of Peterborough. So all those reasons, it was like, yeah, really, really enjoyable. And again, I smiled because so many people enjoyed it. But now it's back to the real world and back to, you know, the hustle and bustle of Championship and League One football, you know, it's the way it goes.
And you got a couple of home games coming up. You got Middlesbrough and Luton.
Easier, did I?
I know. I guess that's the Championship, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's like, listen, Luton, wow. Third in the Championship, 6 points off Bournemouth. Magnificent. Well, you know, all I can do is take, without sounding like a pun, take my hat off to the Hatters, you know, and their manager, their players, their directors. They're not owned by a billionaire. They're not owned by, you know, I was going to say Russian oligarch or whatever else, but bad timing. They are owned by good people, you know, consorting that bought it. It's fan-led as well. You know what? Absolutely rooting for them. If they got promoted to the Premier League, that's something I'd love to see. So I'd like to see, you know, Liverpool players, you know, going into that stadium next year, you know. And I think Luton are showing, I think, bit by bit, they're getting better and better. And the next big step for them is now a stadium, I guess. And it becomes really exciting for them. And you know, the Championship's just, you look at it and you go, wow, Huddersfield this season, done brilliant. Bournemouth, Fulham seem to be running away with it. Under that, you got your Sheffield United, your Middlesbroughs, who you think will always be thereabouts. And then you got your Lutons, your Coventries, your surprises, who are hanging around the edges. And you're thinking, okay, you know, let's go for the little guy. But, you know, the non-parachute, you know, payment, TV, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah, I at the moment I couldn't pick, you know, who, if it was the top two away on their own, I couldn't pick who the third one would be. But fair play to them. And look, I hope we can get results against them because that's what we need. But, you know, if it goes to plan for Luton, good for them. you know, if they do manage to go up.
Well, you know, you've shown against QPR that you can beat the teams who are up there. And...
We can beat anyone, Phil. One thing I've realised and everything else, we can beat anyone. But a lot of the time we've beaten ourselves. So, you know, we can on our day beat anyone. And we have players that will... The one thing that, like I said to you, the glimmer of hope for me on Sunday was we're now finally scoring goals. We're now finally doing what Peterborough United have always done, to score goals. And when Peterborough United scores goals, they're dangerous. And that is the glimmer. We've scored in four games in a row. You know, we've done 2-2-3 yesterday. We look very dangerous offensively. And it's been a long time where the other team's been worried about Peterborough United scoring goals. And now all of a sudden that's back. And hopefully it's here to stay. And, you know, if that can keep going, who knows? But it's a tall order. You know, I'm not even looking at that. All we can do is if the lads can keep going out and doing that and keeping our fans happy, brilliant. It's a great template. It's a good platform for next year. If by some miracle it took us to where we needed to do this year, listen, I'd be forever grateful to the big man above, you know. But I'm not sure we deserve that. But I guess you get what you deserve in football. So let's see what happens. You know what I mean?
And we talk about momentum. So yeah. It's all about, you know, that's one of the things that you struggle with when you know, for teams that get relegated who have just been in a battle all season long and you end the season awfully because, you know, you gave up and you can't just turn that around in the summer and suddenly start winning games again. Or it's very hard to do that.
It's really hard. In fairness, Grant McCann did that at Hull and he won a league title. And there's a big reason we hired him as well. You know what I mean? So we've got a management team who've done that. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see us win games now before the end of the season, score lots of goals, give our players confidence to go, okay, we you know, this isn't what it was meant to be. But you know what? We've seen now what it takes. So now we've got to get back here. And we're going into the summer. We're going to have to work our... It's going to have to be the best preseason we've had in years. We're going to have to work our nuts off. And we're going to have to give back to our fans next year. And we're going to have to go, yeah, that was a blip on our trajectory. We ain't waiting years to do it again. We're going again. And that's the way it's got to be for the football club. The football club got to do that in the summer.
And I want to give a special mention as well to Joe Tomlinson, who's out on loan to Swindon and was just named EFL Young Player of the Month.
Fantastic. He's done brilliant there. Got an injury recently. So he's been back, not in training, but getting rehab and stuff at our place. He's everything we thought he is. He's a young player. Too soon, too quick for him with all the injuries we had early in the season. It was the right decision to get him out on loan. You know, we held it late on deadline day. You know, we made signings in that position. He's been protected from what's gone on. I think Grant's going to love him as a player. He's gone to Swindon. He's making goals. He's keeping clean sheets back there. You know, there's nothing but upward trajectory for that boy. You know, that's $100,000 well spent. He's 21, left foot, right foot, and everything you want in a modern day fullback or wing back. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and a really, really great lad. So we're excited about him coming back in the summer. And again, it's one less position we have to worry about because, again, we've got some really, really... We've got talent, that, you know, in there. Like, our under-23s have got to the final eight of the Premier League FA Cup. Mm-hmm. You know, we've said this all season. You know, Joe Taylor's the leading goal scorer, 10 goals in five games, and now he's suddenly, you know, getting appearances in the first team. And Grant loves him, and he's gonna score a shitload of goals next year. There was like, some stuff on Twitter and retweets from journalists about him the other day. What are we doing playing him over a lone player? And this boy was at Kings Lynn only 7 months ago. When I signed Dwight Gayle, I think he was at Concord Rovers 6 months before.
Yeah,
I signed
it doesn't matter, does it? If you can do the business.
Stop talking nonsense. And by the way, that 19-year-old reads this shit. Give the kid a break. He's an absolute prolific goal scorer. You got Jono and you got Marriott. And then you got Ricky and this kid. We're good. We're in really, really good shape there, strikers-wise. As long as we have more fit, we're good.
And then did I see Ronnie Edwards got called up to the England under-19s as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And played three times last time for them. Surprised he wasn't called up to the under-20s. You know, he's probably played more championship minutes than any other 19-year-old centre-half that's in the under-20 squad. Very surprised Ricky didn't get called up. If anyone had watched, you know, Man City in the three games afterwards, again, show me a 19, 20-year-old, you know, wide left, wide right, kind of fast attacking player in a front three out there playing in the championship. Yeah, the kids, sky's the limit for him. So that's going to come, you know what I mean? So that won't surprise me. Again, some really, really good young players. So it's exciting. So any other posh stuff before I ask you about your beloved Bradford?
I don't think so. I think we covered the questions I had for you to catch up on. on all things posh.
Yeah. Okay. So you got your first win under Husey. That was obviously that last week.
Yeah, that was away at Forest Green, actually.
Wow. 2-0, right?
Yeah, 2-0 at Forest Green, and then away at Hartlepool a couple of days later. So we got a 2-0 away at Hartlepool as well. So we got back-to-back wins for the first time since August, and then followed that up with a defeat at home to Port Vale on Saturday.
Well, did you watch the game or were you traveling?
I listened to half of it and watched half of it. I was in the airport.
I love it. It's like, do whatever you can.
Oh, yeah.
But promising signs?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, as usually happens, you go on a run of a couple of wins and everyone gets overly excited. And, you know, Port Vale brings you back down to earth a little bit with another home defeat. We've been awful at home, which is unusual for us. I mean, you know how much we often can make Valley Parade into a bit of a fortress, but
yeah,
it's just not happened this year. And maybe the players themselves haven't got the bottle for it.
What's the manager saying? What are you hearing from the manager?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he started off by saying, look, there's a lot of things I want to change, but I want to change them slowly because I don't want to, you know, confuse them and tell them too much differently and think that they'll just be all over the place.
Good management.
You know, he's talking about the fact that, you know, previously under Derek Adams, we didn't care about possession, you know, and he's talking about the fact that, you know, the opposition can't score if we've got the ball. So we want to spend a lot more time on keeping the ball, you know, as opposed to not really caring about it. You know, he's talked a lot about, you know, looking at the players from a technical perspective. He said he thinks they have a lot more technical ability than probably he thought coming into it. So he's brought some players back in that were ostracized under the former manager, but are good technical players because he wants players who can, you know, create time and space for themselves and who can actually think, you know. So he seems to be saying all the right things. He gives you confidence that he knows what he's trying to do.
He handles a press conference well.
Yeah, he handles a press conference like is a real manager who knows what he's doing and has got a plan and is, you know, is putting the building blocks in place. And
he's not salty. He's not like, you know, bitter and salty when it, you know, you lose the game and like someone's asking a question. And yeah, it's refreshing.
Yeah, and that he's actually watched the same game as you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which was a big thing that we had against Derek Adams and that you have a lot of managers. You know, it's like they watched a completely different game sometimes.
Oh, of course, in their own head, yeah. Mm-hmm. What's Ryan said to you? I mean, is Ryan's getting on well with him?
Yeah, he's, you know, I think that Mark is, you know, is really bought into the club and, you know, there's no airs and graces. He's like, you know, after his first day and all the press and all that went down and the hype, Mark was just like, I'm so happy that's out of the way. Let me get on the training ground. You know, and that's where I want to do my work.
No, good. I read a really good article. It was in The Athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Was it about Bradford? And it was in there about your lease on the stadium.
Yes.
And the year and the money and, you know, the managers and the this, the that, the ownership. Did you read that article?
I did, really, yeah. It was a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I read it. And it seems like, you know, with the stadium, we pay, I think it's going to be $500,000 a year just in rent. So that's always been,
and that,
you know,
goes
the lower
up,
you,
like 2.5-3% every year, I think it goes up.
Yeah, but it's kind of an escalator, but it only kicks in every 5 years. So it's flat for the it's a 25-year lease that actually ends in about 3 or 4 years, I think it is. And, you know, the owner of the stadium has never shown any interest whatsoever in selling.
Why would he?
Right. Oh, absolutely. He bought this thing as a distressed asset for $2.5-3 million, and
yeah,
he gets $500,000 a year for 25 years.
Exactly. Who is the owner of it?
It's a chap called Gordon Gibb, who owns Flamingo Land. And back in the day, he was our co-chairman for a while, just in between our two bankruptcies. So without him, you know, we may not have had a club. That was 20 years ago. And he's certainly done all right out of it.
Wow. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And did I read in there you don't have a training ground? It was like on a school thing? Or
yeah, well, it's not our own. So that's something that Ryan's trying to, you know, I think in the long-term plans is get our own training ground. But we rent from a school in Bradford. So, you know, it's almost as ours. We have exclusive right to certain facilities there, but it's not owned by us.
Right. We took land off the school. We pay like £1 a year for 30 years. And we've obviously invested millions in that structure. Go to 3G, to 4G, to, you know, the facilities, the pitches, you know, kind of thing. It is ours, basically. Do you know what I mean? Because of the peppercorn rent we pay. So I presume it's a similar thing that you've got.
We pay a lot more than that.
Okay.
You know, it's in from memory, I think it's in the six figures. So it's not cheap rent, but you know, we have exclusive use of the facilities that are there for our training. So it's not like they're shared and we've got to figure out, you know, we're using it sometime and the school's using it some other time.
Well, but, with six figures, I've expected to be like a Rolls Royce, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, we don't have a lot of assets. You know, I think that's one of the challenges, is that we rent the training ground, we rent the stadium. There's not really that many playing assets, at least right now.
Yeah. How's the boy I had that was with you? What's his name? From Scotland.
Jamie Walker. Yeah, he's been injured, unfortunately. So he looked a class above everybody else when he came in on loan, like just the speed of thought. And then he did his hamstring, like every other player that's played for us this year seems to have done the hamstring. We've had so many hamstring issues. And he's just coming back and, you know, he's been playing him 45 minutes. He's made a big difference. I mean, he's on a salary that's way more than we could ever afford right now. You know, that's heavily subsidized by Hearts, I think it is, that we loaned him from. You know, he's made positive noises in the press about if a deal's on the offering full time, then, you know, he's certainly interested in talking about staying. But I would doubt whether, unless he's at that point where he's not going to get offers like what he got in Hearts, he's probably not affordable for us.
Well, he won't. If he's out of contract in the summer, who's going to offer him that kind of money again?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. What's the market for him now? I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's that lucrative. Do you know what I mean? If he dropped down to League Two and he's in and out with injuries and stuff, I wouldn't say, you know, there's a two-year lucrative contract waiting around the corner. So if anything, now's your chance to pounce. If you like him as a player, you should be pre-signing him, because if he's out in the summer, I don't know if he's still got a contract with Hearts, but if he's out, you could do a pre-sign now. You know, and if there's a player in there, now's the time to do it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, well, there you go. So why did you lose on Saturday? What happened?
Port Vale were just a better team. You know, they came, they've got a lot of quality. They're probably underperforming this season. They're mid to high, but they're not in the playoffs yet. I would say that they're probably a playoff quality team. And they came and they kind of neutralized us. And we were never really at the races.
What the fuck has happened to Bristol Rovers with the
running? No, third in the table now.
Like, fair play to Barton. Fair play to the owners for not bombing them out when they were losing every fucking week. I mean, wow. I mean, fair play. I mean, they are just like, they are like an absolute fucking, they're like a Tesla fucking missile in that SpaceX program of Elon's. You know, they just gone.
We've got them in a couple of weeks as well, so it'll be interesting to.
I mean, Mansfield started that kind of thing, and then Bristol Rovers have just gone to another level, haven't they?
I mean, Mansfield has still got three games in hand, but they fell off a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bristol Rovers just kept on going.
Yeah, it's incredible, to be fair. Almost like what Bolton did a couple of years, last season.
Last year.
Yeah, where they came from 15th to 17th. But I mean, Bristol Rovers were even lower. I mean, they just gone bang. So fair play to them all there, because big club for League Two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and your boy Steve Evans went into Stevenage.
He did. He texted me about it. I think he'd been offered a director of football job somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been offered a manager's job. And I said, take the director of football job. I said, it'd be good for your health, good for your marriage. I said, probably get paid more, less stress. And I said, you'd be pretty good at it. I said, you've signed a few hundred players in your time. So I said, you know. So Steve just missed I think Steve would have worked anywhere. He just wanted to be back in the heart of the battle. Steve Evans doesn't want to be sat in his house, you know, or lying in his jacuzzi tub. He wants to be working. So fair play to him. He's still got the hunger, the desire, and, you know, wish him, you know, in fact, I feel bad because I didn't send him a message. I've been away and stuff. So I do have to send him a message, wish him well. So has he started already? Have they had a game yet?
I think he started. Let's see if I, how they did at the weekend. It was postponed. So they were supposed to play Mansfield. They had their COVID outbreak, didn't they? All of Steven just came down with COVID.
Oh, right. Are we still doing that? Are we still playing that game in the EFL?
Yeah. It was the first one for a while.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
So it got called off.
Okay. Well, we'd moved past COVID, you know what I mean, as regards in the football world. But fair enough. What else is to talk about? Come on, hit me.
Well, before we go down some of the other leagues, I want to talk about Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what do you make of it? There's been a lot happened with Chelsea, obviously, since we last spoke.
Well, my honest opinion, So being in Dubai when it was all kicking off, a lot of Russians in Dubai for obvious reasons, including rumors of certain Mr. Abramovich had parked his jets in Dubai. Because obviously that's one safe place. No one's going to nick your money. Have you seen any of the evidence, you know, regards that he's been sanctioned with from the UK and the EU? Is the real evidence to these sanctions? I know there was something along the lines that one of his factories made weapons for Russia, but there are companies in America that make weapons for the American military all the time. I'm just, and I'm not look, what's going on in the Ukraine, and I personally donated money to the relief effort 2 days ago because it's horrific, you know. I look at it and go, I hope to God the UK and the EU have got it right. Because when it's all said and done, if he goes to court, and I'd imagine he will, and wins, by God, I tell you what, they're going to be paying some damages. Because if the sanctions are a part of virtue signaling, as opposed to fact, you got a real problem. What I don't understand and what I don't like is I don't like the fact that the football club and its fans have been punished. Because it's really easy to say Abramovich can't get any money from the football club. I don't think he got any money from them anyway because it was going the other way. So he can't get any money from the football club. So we're going to park him here. Yes, he's got sanctions. Yes, in essence, the asset's frozen until it's sold. And I imagine when it's sold, the money will be sat here. No one can do anything with that money. Because right now, it's a sanction. It hasn't been repossessed. It's a sanction. People have to understand. Nobody's taken his house. Nobody's taken his football club. They've sanctioned and frozen it, which means he can't get money that way. So in essence, he's not in control. Just like his house in London.
Yeah, like he can't take profits out of the business. He can't sell his house.
He can sell his house if he's from the club with permission, but the money's got to sit here until this is all finished.
Yeah.
I would imagine, you know, two things will happen when it's finished. A horrible bastard Putin, if he finally fucking relents and gets out of Ukraine and gets what he wants through whatever the talks will be, whenever that happens, part of those talks will be you're lifting all the sanctions on Myoglocks and you're lifting the sanctions. Then you'll know how close Abramovich was. But none of us really know. We read articles like everyone else. Regardless, he's got companies all over the world. Of course, some of those companies would have defense contracts with Russia. He's Russian. If that's why he's sanctioned, you know, again, I'm not sure that's legally viable because you're not breaking the law. You could have a company making aluminium that sells stuff to armies from different countries around the world. Whatever those armies do, there's no law stopping you from selling to them in the first place. So I'm not defending him. What Putin's done and what they've gone into Ukraine and done again is barbaric and something that should never, well, let's just say it would never have happened under another president. But anyway, we're here now. We're dealing with what we're dealing with. The way I look at it is, how can you stop a football club from selling its club shop shirts? How can you sell a football club from traveling? How can you stop a football club from operating as a business with hundreds of employees? They've probably already let go some employees if they can't pay wages. It's horrific. There are innocent people losing their jobs. Yes, there are innocent people losing their lives in Ukraine, but put one next to the other. They're two separate issues, yeah? Chelsea Football Club can be run as an organization with an independent arbitrator, paying its bills, operating normally, without Abramovich getting a dollar. And any kind of money or any profit or big surplus money can be held in an account, arbitrator or whoever you want to put in there, you know, on behalf of the government even, to operate it all. Yeah,
if they have to sell players to get cash, yeah, they have the assets.
Absolutely. If they have to, because they're a club that runs on, usually they probably lose 20 million a month that he would write a check for. So now you need a period of time. If they're not going to sell the club, how do we run the football club and how do we wash our face? Okay, so now we're going to sell it. So they put it out for tender. Now you got four or five people looking to buy it. Great. Again, and then I hear people talking about how the money is going to be spent. Well, we're going to give that money here and do that money. Again, you're missing the whole thing here. You know, that's not your money to decide that. That money will be held in escrow until the whole sanction thing either turns into we're taking his assets for real. But to do that, they're going to have to win a big legal battle. You know what I mean? So he's still going to have, in my opinion, what will happen, he will have the ultimate right to decide who the club gets sold to. Yeah? And I just think it's horrible that the fans are getting punished. I don't get it. And some journalists are going to write articles and argue and go, well, actually, all the money and the success of Chelsea the last 20 years has come off the back of an Ogilark who has supported Putin and done this and done that. Okay, great. Bring your evidence and put that forward. Because nowadays, everything the last 2-3 years, as we've seen in the era of Trump, there's a lot of shit thrown out there in the press. There's a lot of stuff that's peddled, particularly by the left media. but none of it ever comes to anything, as we've seen recently. You know, those guys over there on the left, and I'm not saying you, all right, have been peddling this and peddling that and peddling that, and guess what's happened in the last like 12 months? A lot of it has been proved to be false narrative. Even you'd agree with that. And all I'm saying is, it's the same here. Before peddling, well, he did this and he supported that. Evidence, guilty or innocent. Do you know what I mean? So you know, I'm very surprised that it got to that. And it seemed to gather steam. There were a lot of other people sanctioned, and suddenly he was the final one. But it seemed to only happen after a lot of people in the House of Commons started shouting, after a lot of articles were written in the newspaper. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it was very strange how it was like he was the last man standing, and
So hang on a second. So all of us, you've done these, but you finally got around to him. So I'd love to know how that decision was made.
Like they were trying to avoid doing it, and then felt the peer pressure, the public pressure was too great.
I call it virtue signaling. So, you know, everyone on social media and everyone in the house, everyone's out there, Abramovich are there. So all I want to see is if there's evidence, I'll apologize and say, hey, the guy's a scumbag, he's evil, he's there, but I want to see it. Do you know what I mean? So again, it's like, what is it? Innocent until proven guilty. That's the society we used to belong to. You know, and obviously nowadays with everything that goes on, it's not always that way. So I hope for the Chelsea fans' sake, and I'm not a Chelsea fan, I'm a Liverpool fan. I just don't like seeing innocent people losing jobs at football clubs for something that could easily be handled a different way. Like I said, if you're stopping, you want to stop him making money, not a problem. Prove that in court, do what you got to do, sanction it, keep it here. But the club has to be run like an organization that it is. And it has a lot of ordinary people on 30, 40, 50 grand a year who have mortgages, families, and they probably lost their jobs the last 3 weeks, you know, because wages maybe couldn't be paid. And that's wrong.
And some arbitrary numbers that they made up about how much money they can spend to do things and how much money they can't spend to do things, which I don't really understand where those numbers would come from.
20 grand to travel and you can't do this. Everyone's laughing about, well, you know, they can't take their airplane and they can't do it. But hang on, they're a Premier League football club. You know, at the end of the day, you know, they're still going to get sold for $2.5-3 billion. So we can all laugh and joke. Look, I didn't like the shit they tried to pull with Middlesbrough in the cup.
No, that was ridiculous.
That's just whoever
himself in the foot with that.
Whoever runs their communications team making that decision needed, like you just said, they needed a bullet in their arse because it was just like ridiculous. You know what I mean? So look, we live in a really, really, you know, the world and everything else going on. As we've seen in Ukraine, I've been watching that for the last 2-3 weeks, you know, and the rest of us are all watching on. And it's just horrible. And we can do all the virtue signaling we want. We can do all the screaming we want, but only action, you know, taken is what solves those issues. And unfortunately, Europe, America, no one's really bar sanctioning, you know, these guys whilst we're still buying oil and still buying their gas and whatever else. And hang on, we're not doing them anymore. We're going to the dictator of Venezuela and we're going to go to the mullahs in Iran, right? That's who we're going to buy oil off now instead. So, the whole thing... I don't know what your take on it is, but all I see is innocent people fighting for their fucking lives, fighting for their country, fighting for their civilization in the 21st century. And again, that doesn't sit well with me. You know, so that's the world we're living in. And all of this sanction shit on Abramovich and whatever else is like a fucking distraction. You know what I mean? Like, you know, eye on the prize, you know, fundamentally, how do we help? How do people like us? What I can do is all I can do is try and donate money. You know, I donated to like to some of the what are they called? I did Red Cross, did UNICEF, but more aimed towards the children that were orphaned and the children that like, you know, somewhere to stay and whatever else, and made sure they were all organizations where 92% of the donation went directly to the effort instead of a load of management fees. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in a nice big building.
Yeah. I could change my Twitter handle to the Ukraine flag. I could spew a lot of virtue signaling and bullshit like lots of the fucking lefties, fucking media sports personalities do online. But at the end of the day, Phil, I'm an action guy. I'm not a virtue signaler. So my action is with money. And I've always said this about when we talked about BLM and race and, you know, stuff. I said, hey, you know, how do we fix some of these issues? It's education. It's putting money in the right place. We're, you know, who are the richest people involved? Well, actually, all the sports people, you know, who've obviously done what they've done the last few years and taken the knee and everything else. And I've always said, within their right, but let's collectively put together money and spend it in the right places to make change. So my way with Ukraine is help out financially as best I can, because changing my Twitter handle to a Ukrainian flag is not going to fucking solve the problem.
No, I think, you know, there's this helplessness that people feel that they don't know what to do. And I think maybe that's where some of the sanctions come from. It's like, oh, we got to be seen to be doing something.
Bullshit.
You know, even though it's not really having that much of an impact. You know, we've, on the procurement side of my business, we've like, how can we help people in the supply chain and get things that they need into Poland and then get them to the border so they can move them? Like, that's kind of an action as much as we can possibly do to connect people to be able to do that.
You do what you can do. Look, your business is a new business. You're not flush with money. So the fact you're even trying to help in some way, you know, I'm a wealthy guy, I can help. You know what I mean? I can't help massively, you know, at the end of the day, but I've done a load of four-figure donations, you know, to certain different things. That's the best I can do. You know what I mean? You know, you got people saying, well, we'll offer our home, we'll do this, we'll do whatever else. But like, again, like how many of them follow through with it? You know what I mean? How, you know, I've seen other people, like I think it was Mila Kunis, Ashton Kutcher, she's half Ukrainian. They've raised millions and I donated some to their fund because they actually did, you know, and that's actual. Usually these Hollywood fucking libs are out there virtue signaling and spewing shit all the time. That's actually making a difference. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, God bless all those people.
So have you been surprised by the valuations thrown around for Chelsea? Because I think they're talking $2.5 billion at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day about valuations. I was like, the Dallas Cowboys were sold to Jerry Jones 30 years ago for $140 million. It's the most expensive franchise in the world right now, valued at $6 billion. Liverpool were taken from the bank by the current owners for $250 million. They'd be valued, if Chelsea's 2.5, Liverpool's got to be in the 2, 3 billion range easily. You've got London, Liverpool, so there's the geography. You know, London clubs are always valued a little bit more expensive. I'm not surprised because you are buying one of the top 6 football clubs in the world, you know, and it's London. And you have the whole thing with the stadium. I would imagine the figure is probably going to be in the 2 to 2.2 range, not 2.5, 3 billion. I think 2.2. He's out about 1.5 billion. And then obviously the rest is profit, which I think he said he was going to donate to Ukrainians. I think people missed that. I think it was like after it was profit, he's donating, you know, after.
Yeah, that was before the sanctions, wasn't it? He was already going through the process.
Yeah, he was reading the temperature in the room with the virtue signaling, so he knew it was coming. So no, I'm not surprised the valuation. I do say though, and I still think Newcastle was a fucking bargain. Mm-hmm. You know, $300 million
or something.
You know, you got to go by over the years, and I'm thinking in 10 years' time, what will a Chelsea be worth? Probably a lot more than that. You know, what will a Dallas Cowboys be worth then? You know, we've seen my own club. I bought it for £1. When I did my deal, it valued our club at nearly $20 million. So valuations change in time, particularly if businesses are run correctly. So I'm not shocked. And for some of the big players I've seen involved, particularly when I see the fund businesses get involved, that tells me they like the valuation at that number and they see appreciation and growth. Because they're not buying it to flip it. They're buying it for a 5 to 10 year exit.
And there's kind of two growth considerations, isn't there? There's one is what is the inherent growth with the industry? So is, you know, media and TV and all the deals are going to continue to appreciate and you're just going to get an increased valuation from that. And then the second is how can I then build on top of that with what I can do with the club? And
absolutely.
Have the club because of what I can invest in the club. And so they're going to be looking at it from two angles.
Absolutely. And they're also looking at the land play that can we finally do that stadium deal to get Chelsea Stadium built? So do we do a Spurs and put $1 billion in and redevelop that whole site and turn it into a state-of-the-art world-class stadium facility? We've seen those valuations go through the roof. You know, the Los Angeles Rams valued at $4 or $5 billion. You know, that's what they spent on the stadium. So, you know, Spurs was, I think, again, was it $900 million or $1 billion?
Yeah, $1 billion, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. So, again, that adds to the valuation, you know, and the facilities and the events you can have on. Look, Chelsea is a giant, so I'm not shocked. And if anyone thought, if any of these guys went in there and were bidding $1 billion or $1.5 billion, again, like I said to you, he might be sanctioned, but him and his number two, Marina or Maria, whatever her name is, those decisions are coming from him. You know, sanctions. By the way, people need to understand sanctions get lifted.
You know, it's a really interesting point you said at the beginning. It's not been repossessed, it's been sanctioned. So at the end of the day, it's not necessarily the government's asset to sell right now.
Not their fucking asset. And like I said to you, they better have got the sanction right. Because can you imagine if it turns out it was fucking nonsense? Do you know, and now you're saying, well, hang on, I've had to sell this to pay the bills. Yeah. A $2 billion asset that's actually worth $4 fucking billion. Let me tell you, he might be getting a few billion written to him in checks when all is said and done if it turns out the sanctions were actually illegal. So I hope for the EU and the UK's sake, they are bang on.
All right. Well, let's wrap up these last few minutes with, let me see. I got a couple of questions. I'm going to go with a couple of questions. We have a question from Niall on Twitter. Can I get Dara's thoughts on foreign managers in the lower regions of the EFL? Has he ever considered it when Posh was in League One or League Two?
I've always veered away from it because I worry about their knowledge of the lower league. You've probably had more foreign managers at Bradford than we have, you know, in the last few years. Some have done really well in the Championship, but I think sometimes they have better resources. And I think when you have better resources, is that the right way to say it? You know,
Oldham went through a bunch of overseas managers, and they would come and they would bring 20 new players every single season.
Exactly.
And, you know, look where it's ended up for them. And then you need to churn the squad even more because no one knows who these players are.
100%. It'd be like taking one of our best young English or Irish or Scottish or Welsh managers and sending them to the fourth division of France.
Yeah.
You know, those clubs in the fourth division of France don't have a lot of money. But if you went and stuck them at a big French club in the second division, that's a different story.
Yeah.
I just think, again, it's a tough one. So would I be open to it? No.
Because you don't have the money, you're just going to bring all your mates that you know from like the youth teams the second tier youth team players are going to come across.
Correct.
Because and you know who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, but look, I have great respect for managers who go out there and go abroad, you know, and coach in different countries and try and take on that challenge. I think it's really, really difficult to do. Really difficult.
And there's a question from The City Vent is the handle on Twitter, saying on the last episode, we talked about managers having agents. Is this a new thing in the last 10 years? You know, has it changed the way that you hire managers having to go through agents?
No, I think it depends on the managers you have. I know a lot of agents who've got stables of managers. You know, it's their expertise. They have like 8-9 managers currently in the EFL. So, and maybe I've just been lucky where a lot of the managers I've dealt with have never really, you know, even Darren had an agent. I think it was his brother back in the early days. And then since then, he's another agent. But it was always me hammering out with him the deal. He always felt confident. Now, maybe in his other jobs, his agent did it. You know, when I hired other people, Gary Johnson, it was direct. Graham Wesley, direct dealing with him. Who else have I had in there? And I've had a few managers. I think Mark Cooper might have had an agent. So far, hit and miss. And I guess when you get to the top end of the Champ or even the Premier League, they all have agents. I mean, that's just the business. So, that answers the question.
Does it change the negotiation when you're negotiating with an agent versus negotiating direct? Like, is an agent going to ask for things that if you're negotiating directly, they're not going to ask for because the agent's just trying to get what they can?
I think some would say, oh, you're only going to say it's easier to deal with a manager because you can, like, hammer them down. It's not always about that. Like, you get some really stupid requests from an agent. You go, I know the manager hasn't asked for that, and now I'm getting wound up.
Yeah.
Whilst the manager will think the agent's doing right by them, they're not. They're actually maybe turning you off. And, I would always be of that mind that you really, really have to trust an agent. They're speaking on behalf of your career. Like, you really, really got to trust them. And I've seen enough in the agency business to know it's hit and miss on the trust front.
Yeah, it's rather than just sending them in to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be just like, if I were that person, I'd be like, look, to the agent, what do you think we should ask for? Give me the demands, and before you send any emails, I want to approve any email offer that you send into a club. Whereas a lot of managers will go, I don't want to know, go get me the best deal and come back to me when you got the deal. I'd kind of want to be a bit, maybe I'm just more of a controlling person, so I want to know more about the process.
Do you find when you're doing well, the agent is then coming back and maybe saying, you know, this other club are interested, you know, trying to get you to re-up the deal?
Listen, that's what an agent will do. I will never hate an agent for asking for silly things and loads of things. That's just the fucking nature of the beast. That's the job they're in. But I'll always respect an agent better if they have common sense. It's the agents who have no common sense, who play stupid games, have stupid expectations, and have stupid demands, and who don't come off the perch, who stay up there in the perch, and they're like, it's that or nothing. They're the ones I can't work with. There's a few of them. I've got a list. You know, when I find out a player's got that agent, I fucking move on to another player.
Yeah, I remember when we had Phil Parkinson as manager, it seemed like every year, about when we were doing well and about his contract, you know, having 6 months to go that Sheffield United were interested.
Rumors, yeah. That shit never bothers me. I never get worried about, oh my God, there's rumors out there. At the end of the day, what will be, will be. You can't negotiate based on fear.
All right, let's check off a couple of other things here. I know we're kind of going over the map, but we haven't talked about this for a while. The Premier League title race, can Liverpool actually do it? You know, last time we talked, it was over and it was Man City, you know, in a canter. Now it's closed the gap a little bit.
If it wasn't for Klopp, Man City would make England very boring. Guardiola and City would just win everything the last 4 years. So, you know, really it's only kind of Chelsea and Liverpool that are keeping it interesting. Otherwise, it'd be pure domination. Can they do it? If Liverpool can win one more trophy after the league, I'd be delighted. Whether it's the Champions League or if they can get a league title, God, it'd be just brilliant because this time the fans get to see it. I'm not sure. I look at the run-ins, I worry. You know, Liverpool squad is much better now. Fair play to Fenway, fair play to the, you know, supporting cast. If they can stay away from any injuries, you know, we have a chance. Take it to the last game of the season, we win the title. That's my opinion. If we don't, I think we're going to win the Champions League again. I don't think we win the FA Cup. I think Chelsea have got the name written on that because of everything that's gone on.
Mm-hmm. You've got, and you play each other. You got Man City, haven't you, before the end of the season?
Man City at their place, which has never gone well for us in recent years. And then we've got, obviously, them in the FA Cup semi-final. So if we come out of that City game unscathed, you know, and it's getting to the last couple of games, I fancy us. I do, you know, at the end of the day. So it's going to be a great title race. And I'm glad it's interesting. And forget about Liverpool, whatever else. It could be Chelsea. It could be whoever. I'm just glad it's not over already.
Yeah, because really nobody wants to see that.
If in March the league title's decided, what a comeback from Liverpool. At the end of the day, fair credit to Klopp. The run they're on at the moment is just absolutely outstanding. When you think of all the issues they had last year, the bounce back, the signing Luis Diaz, and whatever, yeah, fantastic. So I can't speak highly enough about him. It's going to be really interesting. So I can't put my hat on it either way. It's going to be so tight.
And going on the other side of Merseyside, what's happening at Everton right now? They're now fourth bottom.
What I said, listen to my podcast. Listen to our podcast.
Yes, Frank Lampard. You're not Frank Lampard's biggest fan.
Nope. No, not as a manager. Never have been. I think I'm very lucky at Derby. Well supported. They're now paying for that. Took over a Chelsea job with no pressure because of what was going on with the freeze and transfers. So he had to use younger players. I think that suited his personality. Now he's gone into an absolute fucking shit show with Everton. And it's tough. Look, I feel for him because it's tough. But equally, for me, the appointment-wise, was it the right one? Time will tell. I don't think they'll go down, do you?
No, they've still got games in hand.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go down.
But it's getting, you know, pretty dicey. I mean, I'd be worried if I was an Everton fan, for sure.
Listen, they won the last league game. They were shit on Saturday or yesterday against Palace. I watched that game. They got enough games at home. I think Watford, Burnley, Norwich are probably three worse teams than them. I guess it depends how the pressure affects everybody, including Lampard himself. You know, and if he takes Everton down, I'm not sure there's any coming back from that. So if he gets a chance next summer, they stay up and they clear their decks because they've got serious financial things going on to do with fair play, financial fair play. And then they've lost, obviously, the guy who was sanctioned was one of their big sponsors, Usmanov. If he goes with young players, he's got a chance because I think that's where Lampard shines. I think take away, you know, big personalities, big money. You have a team, a club with a young average age. I think he can be a very good manager. I just think it was too quick, too soon for him.
You know, looking at the table, I haven't noticed this for a little while, but sure. Brighton and Newcastle basically next to each other. I mean, how much of the season have they
been? Brighton have had a really horrific run, which has surprised me. But the one thing that Potter's always struggled there is, although the football's been fantastic to watch, and there's a certain culture in the way they play, and there's a lot of respect from the clubs of the world, he's not a great goal-scoring manager. In other words, his goal scorers don't score 20 goals in the season. They miss a lot of chances. I'm sure if you look at the statistics, their conversion rate's probably horrific. They create a lot. They don't score a lot. And if they could fix that, they're a top six club. Because the football, fantastic. I even watched them against Liverpool. Fantastic. But the finishing, fucking awful. So, you know, Brighton aren't going down. And I really like the owners and people behind the scenes at Brighton. So they really need to fix that. Like either Potter needs coaches to come in and help him with the finishing side of things, or they need better strikers. So, you know, one's not exclusive with the other. But, you know, something to turn the page so it doesn't tail off again. That's what they need to do. Palace, They're doing fantastic. Love watching them in the FA Cup yesterday. Really enjoyed them. Who else is down there that's interesting? Newcastle lost the last couple, had been on a really good run. Not surprised. I knew Eddie Howe would get a tune out of them. I don't think they'll go down either. So that's going to be interesting in the summer to see what happens with them.
You know, and all credit to Brentford. I mean, they're 8 points above relegation.
They've got to win games. They're the ones I worry because of obviously getting dragged in. They're not used to it. We've got a lot on the line with that. I want Brentford to do well. I want Ivan to score another 5 or 6 goals. You know, he's already second to Harry Kane for English goal scorers. Great to see. You know, no, so I think he'll end up with 15 league goals, which I think playing for a Brentford is a fantastic return. I think Ivan Toney in a top 10 team creating double the amount of chances he'd score 25 league goals all day long. So I think lots of people are missing the beat there if he's not sold for like mega down the summer. And that's not just because I've a cut on it. I just honestly think you're looking at young strikers out there.
He continues to show that his ceiling is only higher than where he is and what he's doing right now.
We've said this all along. Yeah. You know, you know, in the summer, there'll be a market for two strikers for me. Obviously, you got Haaland, who's going to go probably to Man City. You got Mbappe, who'll go to Real Madrid. And then you have two strikers. There'll be a lot of transfers news around. And that's going to be Ivan Toney and Tammy Abraham's out in Roma, who's now 23 league goals for Roma. So I think he'll be the next 60, 70, 80 million pound sale from Serie A back to the Premier League. Like Lukaku went out there, found a scoring feat and got his 100 million quid move. So, and I think Ivan will be one as well. And I've always said this, funny enough, I think I said this to you privately. If Newcastle had any sense, they'd be signing him and bringing him back. Because the Geordies would absolutely worship the ground he walks on. Because he would score 20 goals in the Newcastle team with better players.
And the very last thing I want to talk about that we haven't touched on since we last spoke is Jesse Marsh coming into Leeds. You know, what kind of appointment did you think that was?
I knew Leeds had come good. I said this. You know, too many good players, too many players that were injured. And as we found out at Peterborough, when you keep players injured, you just can't do the business consistently or at all. So I think, you know, they'll be okay. I you know, coming from 2-0 down against Wolves and winning 3-2, you know, yeah, that was big. And then I think it was the win the week before was in the last minute as well. So some big results have gone their way for them. It'll be interesting, you know, to see what happens in the summer. Do I see him being at Leeds for the next 2-3 years? No.
You know, it's always hard to follow somebody who was an icon, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The shadow of Bielsa will, you know, Bielsa got a lot of time with a lot of bad results. I'm not sure if the roles are reversed and this guy lost 5, 6, 7 games and losing 6-0 and 5-0 and whatever, he'd get the same grace period. So chalk and cheese. You know, and I guess the style as well. It's going to take a while before you see what his style is all about. I know he had a good upbringing. He was at Red Bull.
Salzburg.
Salzburg. And yeah, let's see. Look, always for any manager, you want them to do well. I don't want to see anyone out of a job. So let's see. But it's an interesting one. Good question, to be fair. But I think Leeds fans are going to be okay. They're going to stay up.
Yeah, it was a dicey first couple of games where everyone was kind of questioning it. Wins solve a lot of ills, don't they?
Change everything. Yeah, they change your mindset, they change your mood, they bring a podcast back. I'm joking. Back anyway. You know, people, I laugh. People always think, well, they're only coming back because they've won a game. You know, we preset this before even the game yesterday. Do you know what I mean? So we were doing it anyway.
Well, I like the one where Grant had told you that you're not allowed to podcast.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine a day that I would take orders from anybody? I'm doing a podcast about get to fuck. I did like that, yeah. Fucking some of the shit that I fucking see. Anyway, moving on.
All right. Well, let's call that a day. I think you mentioned at the beginning we've got the International Week next week. So probably a couple of weeks before we come back again. But, you know, keep those questions coming in. All the usual places, either on Twitter or contact at hardtruthfootball.com.
Absolutely. Thanks for your support, everyone. And again, let's all say a prayer and God bless all the people in the Ukraine because they need our prayers, that's for sure.
All right. Until next time, thanks everyone for listening and we'll talk to you all again soon.
Cheers, guys.